Yes, he's here on Wednesday, March 20, the Big Sports Breakfast, Sky Sports Radio and Radio Tab, fresh off a combative performance on NRL 360 on Fox League last night. And one of the stars of the Big Sports Breakfast lunch last Friday. I say stars because you'd think the line for photos and autographs would have been dominated by the likes of Steve Waugh or a Paul Gallen or an Alan Langer. But no, there they were queuing up for Dean Bulldog Ritchie. How are you, Bulldog?
Morning, Middo, and morning, George Costanza.
George Costanza.
So
right.
I flick on the radio Monday morning. I thought, I'll just see if there's a wash up from the lunch. And our good friend here, the old Raiders captain, righteous as ever. I didn't have a beer at the function. I thought, oh, that's interesting.
No, well,
I didn't mention the six wines you guzzled down in record time, thinking it was lemonade.
Well, I didn't tell a lie.
No, but you didn't tell the truth. Like George Costanza. It's not a lie if you believe it.
Yeah, but I didn't have a beer. I didn't have a beer.
But why didn't you tell the whole truth then, that you had six wines?
Well, I didn't think anyone would be interested in me drinking.
Well, I was. Why? I found it very, very interesting that you took that approach, the
and
righteous
you strong
approach.
Strong-armed me after the...
Oh, and then the next thing, I got bullied into going to the pub.
Yes, you did.
Bullied.
Because I was going home.
You led the way in.
No, I didn't.
Rubbish.
I was going home.
When that
and you
light
said,
went
we'll
green
have one.
To go to that Olympic pub,
you said, we'll have one.
It was like you're playing Origin again in 92, straight across the road.
I tell you what, I did get the taste for it in the end.
Really? Yeah. It was a great day, though.
It was a great day, Bulldog, wasn't it?
Yeah.
All the speakers
were fantastic.
All guest speakers
brilliant. If I had to pick out one, I'm reluctant to do that. I thought Steve Waugh was absolutely fascinating and captivating. The stories he was talking about, Curtly Ambrose and Warney, and I just found the whole, 20, 25 minutes?
Half an hour.
No,
it could have gone for an hour.
Yeah, well, I said the same thing to Gal. I said I could sit here for another hour and listen to Steve. Because I was unsure of what we're going to get to, because I'd never heard Steve before. I didn't know where he'd go or what he'd talk about, but he went into everything and it was outstanding.
No, it was great. You didn't have to be a cricket nuffy, really, too, did you?
No.
Like it was
no.
And Alfie awesome
and Gal.
Storytelling.
Millie was fantastic.
Millie was great. Yeah, Alfie, Gal. No, the whole day was brilliant.
520
people, I think, were in the room. Yeah. And I don't think one of them left feeling like they didn't have a good day. Lots of drinks, lots of food, and lots of laughs.
Yeah, it was great.
Well, Buzz was crook on Monday, so we needed someone to take over a few feuds for the week. And you've done so accordingly. What's going on?
Yeah, well, so
I'll tell you what's happened.
What have you got against Orange and Black?
This is what's happened, all right? I wrote a story last week, a Bulldog's Bite comment piece, questioning Benji Marshall. I've been on the show and we've discussed it already, so I won't go back over old ground. But yesterday, for somehow, the SMH, via the West Tigers, have written this story accusing Scott Fulton, the former West Tigers recruitment manager, of wording me up to write the column, which I found incredibly insulting. I'm old enough and ugly enough to pen my own thoughts, and I won't be a mouthpiece for anybody. And for Fulton to be falsely accused of leaking information was damaging for Scott. Scott's trying to get a job back in rugby league after the Tigers debacle, and it was incredibly damaging for him for that story to come out. No one checked with me as to whether Scott had been involved, and I can assure you right now, I did not speak to Scott Fulton before that story. And for the accusation to be made against Scott and myself to some degree, I found it insulting.
Can I ask, why did you want to write that column?
I thought it was a genuine column, Laurie, where a lot of people have missed the point here, probably because they haven't read it and they've just jumped on social media and joined in the pylon, which is how knuckleheads do it these days. But the story clearly asked a question. Benji won't do the hours that other coaches do. I didn't say that was wrong. All I asked was, could this be the beginning of a new era in coaching? If he does succeed, then maybe the 18-hour days for coaches are over. It's smart business. If you can do something in 13 hours rather than 18 hours, do it. Shane Richardson in the Herald yesterday even conceded that Benji doesn't do 14-hour days. He wants to spend time with his family. Mm. And I applaud that. I think if Benji wants to spend time with his family between 5 and 8 every day, wonderful. Go and enjoy your family. It was a question asked as to whether this could be a revolutionary new approach to coaching, or will he be caught short by not putting the hours in? Because, Loz, you know better than anybody, every coach wants to have that 1%. If one finds out the other one's in there at 5:30, he'll go in at 5:30 because he doesn't want to be caught 1% down on the weekend. Benji doesn't do that. Or so he claims. So I claim he didn't do that. He is now insisting that he does do that.
All right. What did you make of the Tigers' performance in on the weekend against the Raiders?
To be honest, if I was a Tigers fan, I couldn't walk away from that game with any great confidence. They were gritty in defence. They were down 14-0, I think, after 13 minutes.
So you were worried at that point, weren't you?
Correct. They came back to, I think, level it up, or they were two
it was
points 14, down.
12.
Yeah, and then the Raiders kicked away again. Look, certainly there were some signs there of a bit of fight defensively, but the day an NRL club starts to feel that a 20-point loss is acceptable is the day you start to think, well, I don't know where this club goes to and what it stands for.
The other club in orange and black you've written about this week, or today in Bulldogs Bite, is the GWS Giants. Tell us about this.
Yeah, I wrote a story in today's paper. It's up online at thedailytelegraph.com. The GWS Giants, they're a fascinating story. I didn't realise until a couple of days ago, they are the outright favourites for the AFL Premiership.
Sure are.
Or the flag. I think it's $5, Middo. And I think the Swans might be second favourites.
They are.
$6.50. So I thought, gee, they're a funny story, GWS. Does anyone actually really know who they are? And I say it respectfully, because GWS know internally they've got big challenges ahead in terms of their identity in Western Sydney. So I thought, you know what, I'll plop myself out at Parramatta Mall and just ask a few bypassers if they know four photos, which I had with me. Toby Green, Stephen Cornelio, Lockie Whitfield, Adam Kingsley. And the responses were alarming for GWS. Only one bloke in an hour and a half I was out there knew who they were. Someone compared Toby Green. They thought it was Clarkie.
Actually, there's a photo of Toby and Clarkie here. And they do like, look similar.
There is a resemblance.
Is he Clarkie in Pakistan or Clarkie from when?
Yeah. Which Clarkie we're going with?
Adam Kingsley, someone thought was Anthony Seibold.
He does look like Seib.
Lockie Whitfield, some bloke said he looks like that I'd bloke out of Mad Magazine. Is it Alfred E. Newman? So there are lots of varying answers, but no one knew who they were.
Okay.
I guess that's the bottom line, Mido, is their identity.
Look, I don't get into the whole Code War thing. I think it's ridiculous. But what? So rugby league should not be worried about AFL incursion. Is that what you're saying?
No. I think the AFL are determined to make GWS work. And after 12 years, I think it has worked. Certainly on field. But off field is their problem.
Yeah, it's difficult. It's difficult.
And I know they have spoken to sports editors around Sydney in the off season. I wasn't privy to the conversations, but they know it is a difficult breakthrough.
No doubt about
But if they're
that.
Ever going to do it, the Tigers, the Bulldogs and the Eels all missed the finals last year. Round one, they got 21,000, Middo, out there at Olympic Park.
Yes,
but I think their figures showed that a lot of those were Collingwood fans, because the next home game, immediately against North Melbourne, they pulled 8,000.
Which is a team which just never
draws. I get it.
Great.
I get it. But I think that round one was a bit of an anomaly because of the Collingwood surge into town, which was fine.
They've just got to be a consistent footy team.
Correct.
Traction. They've got to be semi-finalists
but,
and
but
grand
they
fans.
Are consistent. On the field, Middo,
yeah.
They're an extremely
well, last
strong
year they
franchise.
Were because they got, and you know, years before that, they have been in a grand final. Get all that. But if they can win a grand final and they consistently be playing finals and you know they win two premierships in the next 10 years, they'll be not well known in terms of Parramatta and Penrith and Dogs, but there'll be more people that identify with those players,
particularly around schools.
Yeah,
because the AFL is spending $1 billion in the next 10 years to double its participation rate. And the place to go and ask, you know, will be kids around schools, teenagers, high schools around the western suburbs. And I reckon in the next 10 years, if they have success on the field, more and more will be able to identify those players. But it is hard. It is hard.
Yeah, they're never going to be the number one sport here in Sydney. But they'll certainly gain more traction the longer they're here and the more success they have. Now,
what about the first bloke I asked? So I'm at a Parramatta Mall, right? I'm right outside Peter Wynn's score. And this bloke walks towards me, and I thought, I'll just ask him. I said, hi, mate, I'm just from the Daily Telegraph, just doing a quick street poll, only take 30 seconds. Do you know who these four people are? He said, no, but I know who you are, and you're a dickhead. And he kept walking. I thought, oh, welcome to Parramatta, dog. It's lovely to be here.
Well, he got it right.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, jeez. Where can we go after that? I'll tell you where we're going to go. Halfbacks.
Four of them.
Plenty of people will say they're the most important player in a football team. Yet here we are 2 weeks in and four have been dropped. So what have you made of that decision or those decisions, but in particular the one with Jackson Hastings being dropped? He was very influential in that team last year, but then being dropped and not wanting to train with the reserve grade side.
Yeah, I thought Jackson was hard done by. I think all four have been hard done by, Loz. I said last night that the patience and tolerance of coaches these days around playmakers seems to be minimal. I mean, in the old days, and I don't want to live in the past, you can't imagine four halfbacks getting the bullet after 160 minutes of football, particularly the first two rounds, because you've put so much into those halfbacks in the off-season. You've invested time and education and video and everything you want, you've put into that bloke. He is your number one man. And then within two games, gone. Bud Sullivan, only one game. The Tigers had a bye in round one. As for Jackson, you know, I think he can be feeling hard done by, Laurie. I thought if one of the players at Newcastle in the halves was going to go, I thought Tyson Gamble was average last week, and I thought he might have gone. But Adam O'Brien obviously thinks that the side's looking a bit slow.
What about South Sydney? Big decision by Jason Demetriou to drop Lachlan Ilias and put young Dean Hawkins in. What have you made of that selection?
I was talking to Dave Riccio, one of my mates at the Telegraph, and he claimed that the decision was made and there was some significant input from the senior players. Do you have a problem with senior players being discussed in regards to team selection?
I don't think I've been a part of it myself.
But Laurie, if you're driving culture, I've got no problem with the senior players. But when it comes to actually team selection, wouldn't Lachlan Ilias now be looking out the corner of his eye thinking, well, I know you and you talked about me and now I've been dropped. Can I look you blokes in the eye ever again? And I'm not just talking about South here. I'm talking about the overall situation of senior players having a role in team selection. I think it gets very murky and very dangerous.
Yeah. Well, when I mean team selections, you don't actually go
who's out, who's in.
Who's out and who's in, but the coach will come and ask you, if you're a senior player, your thoughts on what he's thinking in terms of whether we keep this guy or whether we don't. And that's what leadership groups are about as well, the coach to bounce ideas off the playing group. But at the end of the day, it's still the coach. The coach has got to make decisions where he thinks the team is heading rather than the playing group is heading. Yes, you can get all that information and ask the players. Players should never, I don't think, be the judge of who's in and who's out.
Teammates.
But they should be consulted on certain things, most definitely.
I've no doubt that's correct. No doubt. You could see it last year, the back end of last year. There were just little things you could see on the field that a divide was happening there between Ilias and his teammates.
I think Ilias is a
But that would happen
player.
In most clubs too, boys.
For sure.
Don't
particularly
just say,
when you're losing.
Yeah, but don't just say this is a South Sydney problem, because I would assume most coaches would be asking their senior players and leadership group about certain individuals within a team. But at the end of the day, it's not their decision whether they put them in the team or not. But the coach would certainly ask, what do you think of X, Y, and Z?
Is Ilias told to feel incredibly disappointed through the fact that he has been made a scapegoat? Or I'll rephrase that. I'll ask you, Laurie, is he a scapegoat?
Well, we'll know on Friday night.
What do you mean Friday night? We'll know now, won't we? Well, he's gone.
No, yeah. But if Dean Hawkins comes out and plays well and South Sydney play terrific football, you've got to say it's a masterstroke from the coach. So we will know. But if the same things occur on Friday night that's been occurring since round 12 or 13 last year, and the same things that have occurred in round 1 and 2 happen, well, obviously Lachlan wasn't the problem. So it's a lot of pressure and responsibility on the players who have been selected this week, if they've had input into the selection of the team, to get it right. Because if it doesn't get, well, if things don't turn around this week, well, they've got to look at themselves then.
Is there an element of panic in the coaches, Laurie? And we're talking about some of the best coaches the game's seen. Wayne Bennett's one of the four coaches that dropped his halfback. But is there an element of panic to get rid of your playmaker after two games?
Well, I think it's all changed now, Bulldog, because it's so cutthroat. Years ago, you'd probably give people time. And I'm still of the belief that you give your halves time. If you've worked with them in the off-season, and that's the combination you think best suits your football team, that's where you're going. But if there's not much difference between who your number one and number two halfbacks are, I don't think you give that as long as what you would if there's a standout. Because if you've got a standout, you just keep persevering with him. Hopefully he comes good. So you're going to give him a few more weeks. Whereas if it's pretty tight, sometimes you pull the trigger early. You go, you know what? I'm going to make that change. And I reckon that's what these guys have done. They've worked out that they don't think there's much between their number one and two seed. So they're pulling the trigger. And you look at what Bennett did last weekend with Katara and O'Sullivan. Made it work. No one's talking about the selection. And if you win, all the noise goes away. But now that Dean Hawkins, the poor young bloke, well, not poor young bloke, because he'd be that excited, he'll come into this team. But if the same issues occur, he's going to be under just as much pressure as Lachlan Ilias. Mm. Because he'll be sitting there wondering, well, I'm supposed to be controlling this team and other things are at play here.
Do you think Ilias ever felt totally comfortable? To me, sometimes I thought his body language was a bit poor. And I just wonder whether that incredible shadow cast by Adam Reynolds was always sort of in the back of Lachlan Ilias' mind. Right or wrong?
Oh, possibly, but also the comments that Jason said, the coach, in his own words, he's going to be, and I'm paraphrasing here, you might remember what the exact comment was, but something like this, he'll be our best halfback.
It was along those lines.
So that places plenty of pressure on the young boy as well. And I know what Jason was trying to do too. He's trying to build
his confidence up.
I don't know. Would you say that again if you had your time over?
Probably not.
You know, you privately you might, but publicly you probably wouldn't. But I'm not going to question Jason for trying to support a young guy like Lachlan Ilias, because I think coaches need to support their players, in particular young halfbacks, because it's a tough job and there's plenty of pressure on them.
The text line. Old mate was not wrong. Bulldog is a D-head. That's just all that text says.
That's fair enough.
Tough crowd,
you can't please them all, you know. Problem is, I can't please many.
It's great to see you, though.
It's great to be here, as always.
Thank you, Bulldog.
Thank you for having me.
7:30 already, Bulldog.
Time flies.
Welcome back to the Big Sports Breakfast. Now, not too far away, we're going to speak to Anthony Drimmick from the Jack Jumpers. And game two of the NBL Championship Series is Friday in Tassie. And Melbourne won Game 1, Melbourne United Game 1, 104-81. Drimmick was Tassie's top scorer. He had 18 points, so we'll speak to him soon. Now, Brad Davidson's not too far away. Adam Pengilly as well. Mitch Menners, we'll get some midweek mail off him. Sky Racing's Gold Coast caller. Just in regard to the slipper on Saturday, of course, we had the barrier draw yesterday. and Storm Boy the favourite. $2.30 into $2.10. Drew Barrier 2. So $2.10. Gee, that's short, but Barrier 2 does look ideal, although Julia Ritchie, one of the co-owners of Storm Boy, when she drew it, just indicated wasn't exactly their preference, just due to the horse sometimes being a bit slow out of the barriers. Probably would have preferred to have drawn in the middle of the track. So Barrier 2, but Tabs reacted, $2.30 to $2.10. The money's there, naturally. Switzerland Barrier 7, just four back to $4.50. But since the draw yesterday, the hold is virtually dollar for dollar between the pair. Gabe Waterhouse and Adrian Bott, they've got six runners in the field, plus the emergency Espionage. Also in the market, well, you've got only just the two at single figure odds. And then you go back to, Straight Charge, sorry, which was $9, is now back to $11. Is next, but certainly a few angles it looks like you could take here. I've seen each way support for Traffic Warden. I saw Ron Duffersy say that he's keen to give it a spec. Of course, won the VRC size, so it'll be 1,400 back to 1,200, but 51 into $34 as well. Fully lit the inside gate, one of the Waterhouse bot runners, 34 into 21 as well, amongst those that have been specced at the each way odds. I'm sure I saw some each way money for Dublin Down too. Well, it got out to 70 to 1. It's back into 50 to 1. But certainly it's the top two in the market. It seems the vast bulk of punters are in one corner or the other, being either Storm Boy or Switzerland at this stage. And of course, the rest of the group ones, the rest of the fields, the final fields, will see acceptances today. And, of course, those barriers allocated as well. Tim Zhu, he's now going to fight American Sebastian Fundora, who has 20 wins, one loss, and one draw. He's 197 centimetres tall. So Zhu's 174 centimetres. So we're talking 23 centimetres difference in height. Naturally, the 26-year-old American has a much greater reach as well. So on the line will be Zhu's WBO title and the vacant WBC super welterweight title up for grabs as well. Now, Fundora's last fight was a KO defeat to Brian Mendoza, who, of course, Zhu beat on points. But a lot of the commentary surrounding this fight, and no doubt we'll speak to main events Ben Damon in the lead-up, is that this is an awkward fight for Zhu on short notice, just due to the difference in height and reach, and potentially a dangerous run for him on 12 days' notice. But he's not dodging it, Tim Zhu, which could have easily been done. He could have easily just gone, Loz, stuff this, we'll start again, go again. But he wants to fight and fight now, and it's going to happen at the end of the month in Vegas.
It's an interesting one, isn't it? Because Tim has always said that he'd rather be fighting than training, and taking on a guy that's a lot he's a different shape to Thurman. But just to get your head around practicing and training for a guy that you think you're going to fight, and then less than 2 weeks out, you've got to change your whole mindset on what you need to do tactically as well. Because I'm assuming tactically it'll have to be different, because this bloke looks like he'd fight a little bit differently, given his stature, compared to Thurman. So but that's what makes champions too, doesn't it? People that can handle adversity, handle things that don't go to plan, get in the ring and just show people what you're capable of doing. So this will be another feather in his cap if he wins and wins convincingly. But if he just gets the job done, I think it's an outstanding performance from Tim Zhu.
Just as well ahead of Anthony Drimmick coming on, Xavier Cooks, the ESPN, is reporting that the Sydney Kings are set to sign him back to the club on a 3-year deal, and what is reportedly set to be the largest deal in NBL history. Of course, he had a little crack over there in the NBA with the Washington Wizards. Unfortunately, was waived. He's ended up playing in Japan, I'm pretty sure. But it looks like Brian Gorgian, who we had on the show last week, is going to get the job done and get him back, as he wanted Xavier Cooks back to the Sydney Kings. Okay, joining us now, and as I mentioned, that game 2 of the Championship Series Friday in Tassie, where the Jack Jumpers will look to even the series against Melbourne United. Joining us is Jack Jumpers forward Anthony Drimmick. Anthony, a very good morning to you. How are you?
Good morning, guys. Yeah, doing well.
So game one didn't quite go to plan. What did you learn from it?
Yeah, it was a tough game. You know, we learnt a lot. I feel like definitely need to pick up our physicality going into game two and, not bleed as many fast break points. And then offensive rebounds was another big one. You know, we have a huge emphasis on that throughout the season. So, you know, drop the ball in a few different areas.
I guess you need to approach this as do or die, really, don't you? You just can't afford to go down 0-2 considering games three and five, of course, are in Melbourne.
I mean, definitely not thinking that way. It's always one game at a time. So, we want to defend the island, defend the home court, and that's the plan for game two.
Just with the theme, defend the island, Anthony, what did you make of Dean Vickerman's comments before the game where he spoke about, oh, they can talk about defending the island, but we just get on with the job. It doesn't worry us. Did you guys take offence to him sort of basically saying defending your little island?
Honestly, I do not have social media at the moment, and I have no idea what's going on in that space. So you'd have to ask someone else that question, to be honest.
Yeah, certainly Scott Roth got his back up about it, yeah. The coach. So, and fair enough, he's spoken with such passion about Tassie. And tell us about the impact of your home crowd, Anthony, and the atmosphere and how it helps the players.
Yeah, it's honestly insane. You know, I've never played in a place where, you know, the entire season was pretty much sold out before the season. So, it's incredible. The fans show out in droves and they really get behind us. And, it's hard to put into words, really. You kind of have to experience it, you know, with the arena being a bit smaller. It kind of feels like back in the day when we played at Titanium Arena back in Adelaide, you know, the smaller arena, but when it packs out, it kind of goes crazy. So,
Well, your coach has done a tremendous job, Scott Roth, bringing this group of players together in such a short space of time. And when I mean, you know, they've only been in the competition for a couple of years. Can you tell us a bit about him as the coach and as a person?
Yeah, Scott is unbelievable. You know, one word that I use a lot and one thing that he does very well is holding people accountable across the board from the top down, you know, players, staff, and vice versa, you know, everyone holding each other accountable. So he's done a good job to instill that kind of culture and confidence in us. And, I think it works well.
Melbourne United, so many threats. How are they unique to play against, Anthony?
So many threats, like you said. It's always a tough one when you got someone like Chris Goulding running around who you can't really help off at all. Or if he gets one in, one three, and, you know, the basket kind of opens up for him. So, you know, it's an interesting matchup where, you know, they got such big, such good bigs rolling to the basket, but you can't really help too much off those wings, which we have throughout the season. So, we'll watch film today and go through it all and hopefully come up with another game plan. But, should be fun game two.
Yeah, I was about to ask you, how do you counter when a guy like Goulding gets on a run? How do you counter that?
It's tough, right? I feel like He didn't have very many easy looks in game one. He was just hitting some tough shots, so you kind of have to roll with that. And you know, hopefully, some of those tough ones he's putting up, he misses next game or throughout the series. And you can't really defend better than some of those. I know the step back he had in the corner on Mags was, you know, just a tough shot. And credit to him, he's definitely the best shot maker in the NBL. So
How do you freshen up before this game too? I mean, it's what's a 6-day turnaround or five, six-day turnaround. And I heard your coach speak about how there could have been some fatigue play a part in that game last weekend. But what have you done to sort of freshen yourself up going into game two?
The Perth trips are always brutal. Everyone in the league will tell you that Perth trip is hard. And, you know, having to do that twice in a week was definitely a factor, but and then as for freshening up, I've done absolutely nothing, just hanging out with the family, hanging out with my two kids, and just getting some perspective, and looking to roll into practice today and get better, and then see what we can do game two.
And Anthony, you played with Adelaide in the finals against Melbourne United, and they beat you, I think it was in five games back in 2018. So what would it mean, you know, for you personally to win it all at this point in your career with Tassie?
Yeah, I mean, this is why we play, right? You know, you're trying to win championships. That's the whole reason I came down to Tassie was I really believed that we could get it done over here. So, you know, any point in your career, you want to win a championship. But, you know, I'm heading to the far side, I guess, of the career, if that makes sense, you know, at 32. But, yeah, I would love to win one. And, you know, with this group and with this city, with this state, yeah, it'd be unbelievable.
What do you reckon it'd mean to the people of Tasmania if you were able to win the championship?
I don't even know. I can't even put it into words. You know, the fans here, the people here are so passionate about this state and this team. So I'm hoping it would mean a lot. And I guess we'll find out when we get it done.
It's going to be a great atmosphere there on Friday. And looking forward to it, Anthony. And we appreciate your time this morning.
No worries. Thanks, guys.
Anthony Drimmick there from the Jack Jumpers. They are the slightest of favourites to even the NBL Championship Series. They're $1.73 with Tab. Melbourne United at $2.10. Skinny line, 2.5. Jack Jumpers, the minus. We'll preview it all with Brad Rosen, of course, on Friday morning ahead of Game 2. Loz, just a story in the Telegraph today. Dave Riccio reports the Blues coach Michael Maguire has reached out to Zach Lomax. Naturally, it makes sense because those wing positions for New South Wales, and you know, so much talk about Lomax and whether he's happy at the Dragons playing on the wing, but it could be best for him to go to that next level when you think, well, Brian Toto is probably a walk-up start, but the other wing position, very much up for grabs, you would say.
Oh, it's no surprise because I think that most coaches, Origin coaches, would have contact with players leading up to the series and during the season, during the year, just to, you know, have a chat about their game and have a chat about what they're looking for. And obviously there's a position or positions that New South Wales need filling, and Madge has sort of made it clear that he wants to pick guys that are playing good football around the Origin period. And Zach started off the season well. You know, he's got to continue to play like that, but it doesn't surprise me at all that players are just getting phone calls about, you know, how well they're going or what they need to do to improve their game and what Madge is actually looking for, and making people accountable that were there last year, but also wanting to let blokes know that if they haven't been a part of Origin before, this is what means a lot to me when I'm looking at selecting a team. These are the actions that I'm looking for from a certain player, from a certain position. So I'm assuming that that's what he's spoken to Zach about. And there is a possibility that Zach could play Origin this year on the wing. But he's got to play well and be consistent with his football. And if he does that, then he'll be discussed, no doubt.
So that's what you used to do when you were coach, early in the season? Just touch base?
You're not doing it with a lot of people. You know, there's a lot of people that you come into contact with. You might run into them at a ground and just have a discussion with them. You might run into them at a cafe. You might make a phone call. Yeah, you're constantly talking to people about Origin coming up. You know, he had that camp in January. I don't think Zach was a part of that squad. So he's probably also saying, Zach, even though you weren't a part of that squad, I've still got my eye on you. I'm still looking at you. If you do these type of things, this is what I'm looking for from a winger in Origin. So, yeah, that doesn't surprise me at all. These conversations would be ongoing with a lot of players. Just that some find their way into the media and some don't.
Okay, just reiterating the hold with the Tab for the Golden Slipper. Since the draw, best backed is Storm Boy, just from Switzerland. They're clearly the best backed by significant distance. Then the third best back runner is Hayasugi, the Blue Diamond winner, even though it's drifted in the market from $13 back to $17. The fourth best backed is Traffic Warden, which has been $51 into $34. Brad Davidson from Sky Racing, morning to you. How are you?
Yeah, morning, Jared. Morning, everyone. How are you guys?
Very well. Can't wait for Saturday, one of the great race days. And, the barrier draw for the slipper. Your winners and losers. What did you take from it?
Yeah, I don't think there were many losers, were there, Jared? It looked to be most of the main chances. Drew well. Stormboy in barrier number two. Straight charge there in nine. And Switzerland in barrier seven. I think they're all pretty good draws. I mean, we spoke yesterday on the program about, I think 18 of the past 21 winners have found the fence in runs. So low barrier draws generally are a good advantage in the Golden Slipper. And look, Stormboy barrier two. We know he can be a little bit slow out, but I don't think you'll lead the slipper. I think you'll probably just park him behind one or two there and finish off. We saw him do that in a track gallop recently. And look, I think that's going to give him plenty of options from there. They're going to be able to just box seat if they want. If they do go slow, they can kick up and lead. But yeah, I think he might take a trailing position and be in the right spot, turning for home, and be awfully hard to beat. I think the draw for Switzerland's ideal. He likes to get into that running line and really savage the line, and James McDonald's going to be able to do that from gate seven. And straight charge, the connections, I'm sure, are going to be happy with that too. They're going to be able to roll forward, try to take the race up from nine and give a really big kick. So, look, I think there weren't too many losers from the draw. Most of the main chances drew well, and just adds to what's already a fascinating Golden Slipper this weekend.
When you do your form, Dave, are you going to look at the map and go, I need to find a horse that's going to find the fence?
I think so, Loz. Yeah, I mean, it's something that just stands out, doesn't it, in Golden Slipper recent history. And it's surprising because sometimes when you do get those wet tracks at Rose Hill, as we saw last weekend, they wanted nothing to do with the fence. And it just seems to, for whatever reason, we've had a lot of wet Golden Slippers over the last 20 years. But for whatever reason, in this high-pressure Golden Slipper, they just seem to need to find the rail for some reason in the run. So I'm definitely giving it an extra tick, low barrier draws. And Stormboy, of course, is the one who's most likely to find that position from barrier number two.
Chris Waller's come to the defence of the Rose Hill track, Davo.
He has, yeah. He's hit out at those sort of criticising the Rose Hill track. We saw jockey Regan Bayless get on social media on the weekend and say that the Sydney tracks haven't been up to standard the last few weeks, that they've been playing, you know, too wet. And Chris Waller basically labelled the criticism of the Rose Hill track on Saturday as ridiculous. He said he'd like to see most tracks in that soft five range because a lot of horses jar up and whatnot. And, you know, he felt that even though that the fence was off, that you could make ground, and he thought it was way over the top. An interesting one. Obviously, trainers want, you know, their horses to pull up well, and we totally appreciate that, and it's got to be genuine give in the track. But at the end of the day, I think most punters want good track racing. That's where, you know, every horse gets their chance, and every horse is going to handle the conditions. I think the main criticism of the weekend, and I thought it was fair to be honest, was there was less than 6 mil of rain at Rose Hill last week in the lead up to that meeting, and we're on a soft six and a genuine soft six at that. So we're either overwatering the tracks or they're just not drying as they should be. So look, I think, you know, when you get that sort of lead in rain and the good weather we had either side of that, you'd expect a good four and a pretty fast good four. So I'm not sure what happened there on the weekend. It's happened a few times of late. You know, we've even had track downgrades sometimes during the meeting after very, very little rain during the week. So yeah, I'm not sure if these tracks just aren't drying as well or if they're putting a bit more water and irrigation into them in the week leading up. But yeah, I think a happy medium between what the trainers want, a good four would give, for what the punters want, and that's not, you know, racing on genuine soft tracks with very little rain. So I think the criticism was fair personally, but Chris Waller, you know, thought it was ridiculous there on the weekend.
Now, Dave, I'm just looking at the all-in market for the Randwick Stakes, and there's a horse here that's equal favourite with Think It Over, and I'm the horse called, I think it's Via Sistina. Do you know much about that?
Yeah, interesting one, Loz. It's been well back, hasn't it, all week, basically. The camp are, quite bullish about this horse's chances. A six-year-old mare, she comes across from overseas, and I suppose it's the first wave of these internationals for the Sydney Autumn Carnival, and horse finished second in the Champion Stakes at Ascot back in October last year. Left a horse called Dubai Honour in its wake by about seven lengths that day. So looks a horse that loves wet ground as well. So if we get any more rain today and we're in that genuine soft heavy range, that's going to really help her on the weekend. So look, plenty of form to do today, but I'll be surprised if I'm not finding her there in the Randwick Stakes on the weekend, because I think our sort of middle distance horses, they're solid, but we're probably not in a vintage era at the moment of our top horses in that middle distance range.
Gosh, everyone wants your thoughts. Want to know your thoughts on Coleman's chances, Lady of Camelot, Manal. We might get you to give us a line on Friday, maybe, Davo, for the slipper. So everyone's pretty keen on what you think about multiple horses. But today, have you got a tip?
Well, look, I thought Coleman was good the other day. He hit the line well. He's still got to find another length or two. Lady of Camelot, I thought, was the run of the Blue Diamond. And I think she brings that different form and must be respected. And the other one, Manal, look, probably needs to find another level. I thought the figures were a little bit soft there the other day, but is a horse that hits the line with gusto, and that, you know, she's going to really appreciate that high pressure and a golden slipper. But we'll talk about it more on the weekend and sort of narrow down to who we like. But as for today, I thought race two, number two, Ravenclaw at Wyong, equal favourite with Empress of Wonder, but Empress of Wonder comes off that long break and draws awkwardly with the rail out. So I thought Ravenclaw could get forward on the quick back up and be hard to beat there at Wyong today.
Okay, that will be race two, number two, and being scratching time, that market's just being adjusted at the moment. But race two, number two at Wyong, Ravenclaw for J-Mac and Chris Waller is Davo's tip today. Mate, you have a good day. Thank you.
You too, guys. Cheers.